to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalaya Srimate Bhakti Vinata Swami Tanami. Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauranga Vichani Namaste Sasamani Paskijaya Satami Vande Gom Sri Guru Sri Yajapakam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Samana Ravindam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lavita Sri Vishakam Vitam Cha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 4, The Characteristics of King Paranjana, Chapter 25, Text 16. Sabbachatvara Ratyabhir Akridayatana Panai Chaitya Dwaja Pataka Bir Yuktam Vidruma Vedibhi Sabda Chatvara Ratyabhir Akrida Yatana Panai Chaitya Dwaja Patakabhir Yuktam Vidruma Vedibhi
Ratyabhi,
by streets.
Akrida
Ayatana, gambling houses. Apanai, by shops. Chaitya, resting places. Dwaja Patakabhi, with flags and festoons. Do you know what a festoon is?
Above the window there, in that gold with the ribbon in the middle. That's a festoon.
Yuktam.
Decorated.
Vidruma.
Without trees.
Vedibhihi.
With platforms.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. In that city, there were many assembly houses, street crossings, streets, restaurants, gambling houses, markets, resting places, flags, festoons, and beautiful parks. All these surrounded the city. Purport. In this way, the capital is described.
In the capital, there are assembly houses and many squares, many street crossings, avenues and streets, many gambling places, markets and places of rest, all decorated with flags and festoons. The streets are surrounded with railings and are devoid of trees. The heart of the body can be compared to the assembly house, for the living entity is within the heart, along with the Paramatma, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 15.15. It's Bhagavad Gita 15.15. I always taught that to my children as the finding things verse. So that, hey, I can't find my truck. Chant 15.15. So that was one of the most popular verses. My grandchildren are also now learning them. If you want to remember something or find something. The heart is the center of all remembrance, forgetfulness, and deliberation. In the body, the eyes, ears, and nose are different places of attraction for sense enjoyment, and the streets for going hither and thither may be compared to different types of air blowing within the body. The yogic process for controlling the air within the body and the different nerves is called Sushumna, the path of liberation. Anyone know where the Sushumna is? Goes from. Yeah, that's right. Did you just scratch it, or were you indicating?
No, I was going
again. Yeah, it goes from the Sahasra chakra down to the Mula chakra on the spine. The body is also a resting place, because when the living entity becomes fatigued, he takes rest within the body. The palms and the soles of the feet are compared to flags and festoons.
I just want to tell you.
Sapa chadvara ratya bir akridaya tanapanai che chadvaja pataka bir yuktam vidruma vedi bhi. In that city, there were many assembly houses, street crossings, streets, restaurants, gambling houses, markets, resting places, flags, festoons, and beautiful parks. All of you surrounding the city. So, there in the capital city, you've got streets going in all different directions. Some cities are very well planned. Some cities are planned in advance. I think Washington, D.C. is like that, where the whole city is planned in advance. And some cities just sort of develop haphazardly. You know, some people start living by the river, and then some more people come, and more people come, and they build a street over here, and they build a street over there. And, you know, the streets go every which way. In New York, which used to be called New Amsterdam, used to be owned by the Dutch. Yes. They gave it away for not very much money. Anyway, they bought it from the natives for something like $24. Manhattan Island. And then they ended up surrendering it to the British. The British usually win out, at least for a while. Yeah, now they're not so significant anymore. But in New York, most of Manhattan is all planned streets. So there's, like, you know, we have a temple, 26th Second Avenue, Second Avenue. So there's First Avenue, Second Avenue, Third Avenue, and then there's Avenue A and B and C. But the lower part of Manhattan, if you really get down in the lower part of the East Village and Greenwich Village, it's all crazy. The streets all have just names instead of numbers and letters, and they all go every which way. So our body has a series of streets, which are called the nadis, to which Prabhupada is referring here. He said, the streets for going hither and thither may be compared to different types of air blowing within the body. So the prana within the body flows along these nadis, and the main nadi is called the Sushumna. And they're divided also into the ila and the pingala. The pingala is the male controlling the right side of the body and the left side of the brain, and the ila is controlling the left side of the body and the right side of the brain. And our life air is traveling along these different nadis, or it can travel on the Sushumna, as Prabhupada says here, the path of liberation. So this is a very ancient science. Modern medicine has no idea of the science. They're starting, right? Starting, just like acupuncture, which also uses these channels within the body, because this is how consciousness flows in the body. Is based on a similar kind of system. But mostly modern science thinks that all we are is the very gross body. This
streetways of prana and the shushumna. They're part of the wind body. They're part of the pranic body. And there's actually various coverings. Ayurveda describes 7 coverings of the soul in the material world. So gross medicine only knows of the one covering, which is why their medicine often doesn't work and why their medicine often causes many side effects, which are sometimes, as Prahlad Maharaj says, the cure is worse than the disease. They really don't know what they're dealing with, and they're always changing their medical advice. So now the doctors in America are saying, well, no, this cancer screening test that we always told you to get, now don't get it. And this one we told you not to do, now do it. Right? And this exercise for just like, you know, the kind of body I have to worry about getting weak bones. So first they're telling you, okay, if you want to prevent osteoporosis, you should run. And now they're saying, no, that doesn't work. Maybe that'll make you lose bone mass. Maybe you should swim. No, that's not good. And they said, finally, they said, the only thing we can agree on is that you should jump up and down. That's not the latest medical advice. Jump up and down as much as possible. So actually, I was just listening this morning, Prabhupada speaking on 1-2, I think it was 28, where he was saying that no one in the modern universities knows the science that we're a soul. They don't know this. Well, they don't even know that there's subtle bodies. They don't know that there's pranic bodies. They don't know there's subtle bodies. All they think that we are is this gross body. As Prabhupada said a few purports earlier, someone who thinks that they're this bag of... I mean, it's ridiculous. If you took all just what's in the gross body, this is you. You know, if you took all the parts of your body separately and piled them up, here's a pile of skin, here's a pile of bones, here's a pile of hair, here's the eyeballs, you know, here's a pot of blood. That's you. And it probably says anyone who thinks like this is just like a cow or an ass. They're a foolish person. So we learn from Bhagavatam that this, the subtle body, where the thoughts go on, what streets the mind wanders, is what forms the gross body. And Krishna also says this in the 13th chapter, that one gets a gross body that the senses are grouped around the mind. So yesterday one devotee was chatting with me and asking me some questions. It was a lady, and we were talking about the difference of the facility in a woman's body and a man's body. And she was complaining. Said, you know, there's less facility in a woman's body to do such and such thing. And she said, I didn't want this body. I said, yes, you did. You know, how did I want this body? She said. So generally we think like that. You know, I'm just some sort of a victim. Somehow I don't know how I got it. You know, somehow here I am. Raw deal. No, that's what most religionists teach. They teach that you were created in your mother's womb, and why is somebody, you know, green and blue and yellow and black and white and tall and short and male and female and smart and stupid and deformed and athletic and who knows? Just some God rolling the dice. All right, you know, let's see. We'll give you a white male body born in Croatia, and one leg will be shorter than the other. And, you know, just some random thing. I heard that some temple presidents used to do marriages like that in this country. You know, put all the ladies' names in one hat, all the men's names in another.
Ireland.
In Ireland, yeah. We don't call that arranged marriages, we call that deranged marriages. So people think that that's the way God works in the universe. Or they think that there's no God. You know, it's all just evolution. It's all just chance that each of us is a series of billions and billions and billions of mistakes and mutations. And somehow here I am, a series of billions of mistakes over billions of years. It's all random. It's all chance. You know, and the way, then if you think that that's what life is all about, then you're going to do things like try to manipulate the genes, you know, try to do some genetic manipulations to have the proper children, or you know, kill off all races of people because they're not up to your standard, or go have lots of cosmetic surgery or something like that to try to become perfect.
But we understand that we have this body and this situation really, truly, because we wanted it. We really, really did. We actually desired it. And that the way that works is that the mind, the thoughts, moves along certain streets. Just like you're in a city. Everyone here has been in a city, right? Some people never leave some little town. But have we all been in a city? Everybody's been in a city. And you can take different streets to different places. And if you're in a really big, I don't know, I haven't spent much time in Brussels. Do they have different quarters in Brussels?
Yeah.
So like a really big city, they'll usually be, I know New York it's like this. There's the Puerto Rican quarter and the Italian quarter and Chinatown. The Greek area, right? There's the fashion district. There's a slaughterhouse district. You go to the slaughterhouse district and you see all these guys walking around with bloody clothes. Seriously? Then there's pictures everywhere of smiling cartoon animals. Little cartoon pigs. Smiling in the pictures on the outside of the buildings while these guys walk around with bloody clothes on the streets. So there's the slaughterhouse district. There's the prostitute district, right? There's the homosexual district. I once walked through there by mistake. It was interesting. It's definitely interesting. So there's all different districts you can go to, depending on what streets you go down. Right? And in some places, there's a Hare Krishna district, like in Alachua. It's not that everyone who's Alachua is a devotee, but there is a Hare Krishna area. And the supermarkets there, I've been told, I haven't been to Alachua for 12, 13 years, but I heard that in the supermarkets there, a couple days before Ekadasi, they'll have little signs, you know, suitable for Ekadasi. And on Ekadasi, they have signs everywhere, it's Ekadasi today. Because then you're in the Hare Krishna district. Just like you go to the Chinese district, there's all sorts of strange dead creatures hanging up in the windows, right? Depending on what district you go to. And you go to a district, why do you go to a particular district? Because you have certain desires. Or, you know, sometimes it can be you don't know where you're going, like the time I got lost and found the men walking around in women's underwear on the street. So you go to some place because generally you have particular desires. You know, I want to buy a particular thing, I want to see certain people, I want to eat Italian food, I want to do this and that. So you go to a particular area. And then when you go to that particular area, you become influenced by the modes of that area. In that area, they're playing certain music, they're selling certain food, people are sometimes wearing certain clothes, isn't it? Right? There's a whole different atmosphere. Or in Manhattan, like if you go in the Upper East Side, that's where all the millionaires and the billionaires live, and all the buildings are marble, and there are storekeepers, and it's very quiet. There and very clean, and you have all the, you know, Caribbean black nannies pushing the strollers with the white children, and people are dressed very posh. It's a whole different atmosphere. You go there, you go down to Greenwich Village, it's completely different. So we are deciding our fate by what street we walk down, and it's real. It's not just some theoretical process. It's not just some allegory. It's actually real. Our mind, our consciousness from the heart, what we hear, remember and forget, what we choose to remember, what we choose to forget, what we choose to meditate on, determines what street we go. And there's one street for liberation. The rest of them lead all different ways to all different kinds of bodies. But this is actually happening. It's happening just as much as the muscles of my finger are contracting, or the air is filling my lungs, or there's, you know, my eyeballs are getting lubricated when I blink. It's just as much happening that where my consciousness goes develops that particular kind of body. You know, there are some people who can see ghosts. You ever heard of people who can see ghosts? Or maybe some of you had the misfortune of seeing the ghosts. So when people see ghosts, the ghost looks like what that person looked like in life. You know, it'll look like a male or a female, and the color of the skin, and the, you know, even the clothes that they would wear, how they fix their hair. The subtle body looks like that. What's the subtle body made out of? What's it made out of?
What is that made out of? What are the constituents? Like you can say, this is made out of skin and blood and bones. What's my intelligence mostly made out of?
Ether?
No, ether is subtle.
It's
ether is space. Ether means space. Just like in this room.
Sorry.
Everything here in this room is situated within space. What's mind, intelligence, and ego made of?
Desires.
Desires. Desires have substance. Actually, the subtle things are more real than the gross things. We have it backwards. We think that the more gross something is, the more real it is. It's exactly the opposite. The more subtle something is, the more real it is. Made up of desires and thoughts. Mind, intelligence, and ego is made up of thoughts and desires. That's the substance of it. Thoughts, desires, feelings. So just like we say, you are what you eat. Right? It's like this fingernail. Yesterday it was rice. It's a fact. What you eat turns into your body. And if you eat different kinds of food, your body will develop differently. If you eat, you know, nasty things, then your body gets all clogged up, and, isn't it? So our subtle body, we also are what we eat. Our subtle body is what we eat in the form of our thoughts, feelings, and desires. It actually forms our subtle body. Our subtle body has a shape. And our thoughts, feelings, and desires induce us to go in the different nadis of the body. So that the subtle body, which is carried on the prana and apana, is traveling in these different nadis of the body. And then Krishna is very kind, eko bhavanamyo viradati kama, whatever we desire, he gives us. Krishna is not responsible. He says that the living entity is the cause of the suffering and enjoyment in this world. The actions are done by the modes of nature, but the living entity is responsible for the sufferings and enjoyment. We're responsible for that. It's like if you have some company that makes custom items. There's companies that make custom shoes, or everyone's got a custom-made jacket. Or India, of course, everybody gets custom-made things. What only the wealthy do in the West. Everybody gets that done in India. So they measure you, right? You go to the shop. Go to Ganga Prasad and Dinesh and Lloyd Bazaar. Govinda Maharaj just posted pictures of all the shopkeepers in Lloyd Bazaar. So, you know, you go into the shops and they measure you. And then you pick out the fabric and you decide, do I want it insulated or not insulated? How long do I want it? Everything. And then they make it. So that's what Krishna does. He says he knows our desires just like you know the aroma of a flower. So he's right there with us in the heart. And he knows our desires. Not that you can hide them. People think, don't go to Krishna with material desires. That means don't vocalize your material desires. That's what they think it means. They think it means don't go in front of the deity and say, I'd like money and I'd like a car and I'd like a pretty lady to be my wife. No, the idea is don't have those desires in the heart. Krishna's not a fool. If you go to Krishna and say, I just want your emotional service, and your heart is going, I want money and I want a car. He hears what's in the heart. When we say don't go to Krishna with material desires, we mean one should purify one's desires. So the mystic yoga system, which is alluded to here, the way it works is there's yam, niyam. First you do things to purify the body. You try to purify the body of gross activities. Then you try to purify the prana. You try to purify all of the nadis, make them clean. And then once you've done that, once everything is clean and clear, then you awaken the kundalini, which goes to the shushumna and goes to the sahasra chakra, after which one can attain the brahman, or one can attain also paramatma in that way. So that's the mystic yoga system. So we also have something similar. Our idea is we're supposed to purify the body and the mind. We purify the body through following the four regulated principles, through rising early, through bathing, through eating only Krishna prasadam, even the clothes that we wear have something to do with purifying the body. And then we're supposed to also purify the mind. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. So this manmana bhava mad bhakto, matriji manmasku, mamevashas yukta gamatmanama parayana. This verse is spoken twice in the Bhagavad Gita. It's one of the few Another one is, Krishna says twice, is only do your own duty. When does Krishna say this Manmana Bhavanabhakta? Where is it in Bhagavad Gita? End of the ninth chapter, very last verse in the ninth chapter. And? 18. Where in the 18th? Very, very close to the end. Yeah, what comes after that in the 18th? Sarvadhanam Prachaja. So let's think of when Krishna is telling us this. So in the ninth chapter, right before Krishna says this, what was he talking about? Yes, pure devotional service. What was specifically a very famous verse, a verse that really mystifies us? So Krishna was in this mood that my devotees are so wonderful. Right? Krishna was talking about demigod worship in the ninth and the seventh chapter. They're sort of parallel. Krishna talks about merging into the Brahman and worshipping the demigods. And then he's talking about how easy Krishna consciousness is. Just like right now she's offering Krishna a flower. I'll tell you, those are not very nice flowers. The smells, they're not particularly pretty flowers. They don't smell very nice. It's not like, even like this rose has no fragrance. So most of these flowers we're offering are even not very nice. And still you just offer Krishna a flower. He doesn't say it has to be a gardenia flower. It has to be a stephanota. It has to be lily of the valley. It has to be a lotus flower. Any flower. How easy it is. Yakyoshi yada nasi yata hosnidata yata pasisi kantaya taku shona. Whatever you do, as long as it's not, you know, killing animals or selling liquor, with a few exceptions. Whatever you do, offer that to Krishna. Just offer it to Krishna. Very simple. So in this mood, Krishna was feeling this great mood of love for his devotees. He's saying, even if my devotee does something sinful, he's still a saint. Even if he does something considered socially abominable, he's still... Krishna was overwhelmed, actually, with love for his devotees, according to the acharyas when he spoke this verse. And in that mood of overwhelming love, he said, just think of me. Just think of me. And again, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, so Krishna's explained everything. You ever try to counsel somebody? You're explaining all these things to them. And then if you're an honest counsel, you have to say to the person, at least you're thinking, it's up to you. What do you want to do? What do you care about? I got this girl write me, you know, I really want to follow Krishna consciousness, but I'm in love with this boy who's not so strict. What should I do? Do you think I can change him? I said, no, I don't think you can change him. She said, what should I do? I said, depends what you want. What do you want to do? We know, we discuss what would be the benefits, what would be the pros and cons of each situation. And then finally I said, you know, you've got to think about this and decide what your goals are. So after Krishna describes everything, he says, okay, Arjuna, now you think about this. I met a couple of people who said, that's my favorite verse of the Gita, when Krishna says, just do whatever you want. So, you know, just do what you want. But it's not that Krishna's just, okay, just do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. It doesn't matter to me. No. He said, but please. Please. Do whatever you want. But please. Please just think of me. Such a simple thing. You know, in this world, no one's going to say, just give me a flower. One of the top five questions people ask wherever I go is about relationships, especially marital relationships. You never imagine the wife saying to her husband, just flour and water, you know. Just give me a daisy and a cup of water and think of me. That's fine. I'll be happy. Okay. Krishna's saying, just think of me. We find that so difficult. Our minds are going to all the different streets. You know, and then we think, how did I end up here in Chinatown? How did I get here? I wandered, when you wandered in the bad crime neighborhood, you know. I was reading a true story about that once, about this guy who wanted to show his friends the old neighborhood he grew up, and as they were driving there, all the buildings were falling apart, you know, the glass was broken bottles in the streets, graffiti everywhere, and he said, boy, my neighborhood's changed, and all of a sudden there was a man standing in the middle of the street who said, turn around, go back, it's a bad neighborhood. know, so sometimes our mind is just like Chanchala Yamuna Krishna just going everywhere. It's like, whoa, what neighborhood am I in now? Right? So therefore, Maya Shakta Manapata. One must become attached to Krishna. That's the verse 7-1 that Prabhupada spoke about the most often. One must become attached to Krishna. Whether or not as mystic yogis we actually, you know, travel the Shishumna, we have to become attached to Krishna. Then we will travel up, whether literally the Shishumna or not, then we will travel on the path of liberation. We have to become attached to Krishna. We have to become attached to Krishna. We have to become attached to Krishna. All the work we're doing, if we don't become attached to Krishna, then Shrama Evikim, it's all useless. I mean, Krishna does say, he says, just love me. And if you can't do that, then do Abhyas Yoga. Practice yoga. So you'll develop Ichha. You'll develop this desire. And if you can't do that, just work for me. And Ravindra Srupa says, that's our three groups in ISKCON. The people who love Krishna, who are doing practice yoga, sadhana bhakti, and people who are just working for Krishna. But don't just work for Krishna. That's okay. If you're doing something with your body, eventually you might stop to think, now what am I doing and who am I doing this for? What am I doing this for? What's the purpose of what I'm doing? And just like Prabhupada was asked in Hawaii, is it faster if you live in the temple? And he said, that depends whether or not your mind is on a different subject matter. So that is the key. That's how we're building our body. I am responsible, nobody else. I am responsible for what I have, materially and spiritually, and it depends on what I do with my thoughts and my feelings and my desires, and that's my choice. And I can control that, actually. I can control what I think about, what I want. That's not being imposed upon me. I can decide what street I'm going to go down. So though that's the decision I have to make, as we were speaking yesterday, that Rukmini wrote this letter to Krishna. She wrote this letter to Krishna. She said, my dear Krishna, I've just heard about you. I haven't even seen you. Just by hearing about you, I've become so attached to you that I've decided I want to marry you, even though my marriage was arranged through someone else. And Prabhupada says, Shishupal was also, materially speaking, he was qualified. He wasn't like a bum or something. And Krishna got the message. And the Brahmin says, you know, you can do what you want, but whatever you're going to do, you should do it immediately. And Krishna gets on his chariot, the Saibhya Sugriva Megapushpa Balahaka. Saibhya is kind of greenish. Saibhya Sugriva, color Sugriva. I think he's white. Megapushpa is like a cloud. Balahaka is ash colored. And he just races. 1,000 miles. How many kilometers is that? Like 2,000 kilometers? 1,600 kilometers. One night. Prabhupada says, you take one step toward Krishna, Krishna will take 10 steps toward you. Rukmini says, I'll do anything to achieve you. Dridhavrata, Prabhupada says. Anything. He said, I'll do austerities my whole life. If you won't marry me, I'll just do austerities my whole life. And in fact, I'll do austerities life after life after life. So there's Dridhavrata. Satatam kirtayatamam yatatas chandranavratama namasyam tashtanam bhaktya nityamitu upasate. So those who are deviation in my, under this spiritual energy, which of course is Radharani, also Rukmini. If we really want the shelter of Radharani, of Lakshmi, of the goddess of fortune, if we really want good fortune in our life, then we follow their example of being Dridhavrata. I'm going to fix my mind and my desires and my intelligence on Krishna. Whenever I find myself wanting something else, I think, as Burjan would say, if only I loved Krishna. We think, you know, if only I had more money. If only I had a better pair of socks. You know, whatever it is. If only my husband didn't yell at me when I go home. If only that cute girl across the room would marry me. No. If only I loved Krishna. 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 If only. Every time the mind goes, if only I had this, if only I thought this didn't happen. If only I loved Krishna. Whenever we feel strong feelings, strong desires, if only I loved Krishna this much, like the Goswami's prayer, I want to be attracted to Krishna like a young boy and young girl are attracted. So we feel attraction to things in this way. If only I loved Krishna this much. Even if we're angry, If only I love Krishna with as much intensity as I'm angry. If only I love Krishna with as much intensity as I'm grieving. If only I love Krishna with as much intensity as I'm doing this and that. Turn it to Krishna, turn it to Krishna, turn it to Krishna, turn it to Krishna. I would say the mind is always engaged in something. Have it be engaged in Krishna. Otherwise, you don't know what street you're going to end up on. You may look around and there's some pretty far out looking people walking down the street. And you say, how did I end up here? How did I get this body? This family, what street did I walk down? You know, or like you were saying, you walk down the street kind of just looking around and you walk into a lamppost. My oldest son used to do that when he was little. Walking into lampposts and meters and stuff all the time. So be aware. Be aware we're creating. And what happens if you have spiritual thoughts? What happens if you just have spiritual thoughts? Because we said the subtle body is made up of thoughts and desires and emotions. What happens if you just have spiritual thoughts and desires and emotions? What happens? You get a spiritual body. And the subtle body dissolves. You're not feeding it anymore. Because the subtle material body is made up of only material thoughts and desires and emotions. If you don't have any anymore, guess what? It dissolves. That's what liberation is. The subtle body dissolves. It's finished. Then there's nothing more to carry into another gross body. And then the spiritual body awakens. You start feeding your action. Whenever we think about Krishna, whenever we desire Krishna, whenever we have emotions in relationship to Krishna, it's like it's giving like food to our original swarup, our original spiritual body. And just like if someone's been starving for a very long time, you know, the allies who rescued people from the concentration camps. You ever seen those pictures? And the guys were like skeletons. You know, or some kids starving in Africa now in the middle of some war. And you start to give them food. And as you give them food, what happens to their body? It starts to become healthy. Right? It starts to develop again. Like Brahma when he saw Hiranyakashipu, it was just bones and he sprinkles this water from the Kamandalu. So every time we think about Krishna, we hear about Krishna, we have feelings towards Krishna, we have desires in relationship to Krishna, it's like we're giving nourishment to the spiritual body, which gradually gets back its health and starts to awaken. And as we don't have material thoughts and material desires and material feelings, that body starts to diminish. That subtle body starts to diminish. And then the gross body becomes like the iron rod in the fire. It becomes spiritualized. It no longer acts materially. That is Jiva Mukta. So that is our process. We're not so interested just in the mechanical process of trying to clean out the nadis and bring the kundalini on the sushumna. Most of us can't do that mechanical process. As one person I met who can do it says to me, in the present age it's like giving a chainsaw. You know what a chainsaw is? Where you cut down trees with this thing, you'll pull it. It's got a long thing, a chain on it. It cuts through the trees. Seen those things? It's like giving one of those to a two-year-old. So most of us aren't capable of messing with the nadis and the shishunna like that. And people who try to often become mentally and physically ill. So that's not our process. And anyway, generally that only takes you to paramatma at best. But we are trying to do basically the same thing. So questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions? Yes?
Mentioning you can do something wrong, but I mean, I know a family of devotees about three or four of their kids are just bonkers, just very unstable and very. So is that because they didn't apply the process of devotion? It could be many different things.
Could be many reasons. I mean, King Anga had a son, Dana. More Prabhupada's sons became mentally ill. Advaitacharya had three bad sons. You know, a fourth of Krishna's children are here in the material world. So, a fourth of Krishna's children are all delinquents and criminals.
But I just think, if you take to a very important process.
A fourth of Krishna's children are delinquents. And what about Bhumasura? He's the son of Varaha and Bhumi. Can't get better than that.
This is my question, is that it's a very hard process, I should that we have to be very careful how we apply it. Because it could go wrong.
Well, it probably says it's a razor's edge. Do you mean in the sense we could be watering the weeds?
Well, it's just some, I was thinking sometimes if we're not like very balanced in our understanding of Krishna consciousness and we try to pass it on, it may also cause imbalance in the eyes of others who are trying to.
That's certainly true. Certainly true. I mean, if we're, but it doesn't work the other way. In other words, if you study logic, so if there's rain, then there's clouds. Doesn't mean that if there's clouds, then there's rain. So if you preach Krishna consciousness in an imbalanced way, you may adversely affect the people to whom you're preaching. However, the fact that some of the people to whom you're preaching may go crazy doesn't mean that your presentation was imbalanced. Doesn't go the other way. But yes, if you preach Krishna consciousness in an imbalanced way, you'll definitely adversely affect the people to whom you're preaching. Of course.
Because you mentioned that the end of the ninth chapter, the acharyas, they give some more commentary on Krishna's mood. And there's, Gita Mita by Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
Because Arjuna doesn't really believe, because Krishna says even if they perform abominable acts, they're still to be considered sane. And Arjuna doesn't believe him. And Krishna said, I think Arjuna says that the people will criticize or something. And Arjuna said, and Krishna says, no, you take mridanga, you take kartals, you go out, you declare it. And he gets really fired up. So you declare it boldly, my devotee.
That's your vision of Chakravarti Thakur's
school. Yeah. It's very, every time I listen to it, I cry.
That's very nice.
Krishna's
yes, at that point in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is feeling very intense emotions about his devotees. And the same at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, like if you have someone you really love, they're a really good friend, and you're not sure, you know, are they going to keep taking heroin, are they going to become sober? You say, you know, look, this is the facts, do what you want, but please do this. Please do this.
When I hear that or read that, I find it very inspiring. But why is it that we don't have that in our life? Because we have Bhagavad Gita, sort of, a basic version. Why do we have the extra commentaries as
well? Well, that's being published now. There are devotees who are publishing the different commentaries. I think Balde Vijayabhushan's commentary is being published now. So I'm sure all those things will come. We see devotees translating books.
Is this because Prabhupada had the commentaries?
Publishing books? Well, Prabhupada had to decide, you know. You don't want to have a Bhagavad Gita that's 3,000 pages long. So he has to decide which of the commentaries he's going to pull for his own purports. And you see that Srila Prabhupada's purports were very much directed at what he was seeing in the world around him at that time and what he felt was the most important. So he's pulling from the commentaries of the acharyas and preaching for that time, place, and circumstance. So gradually we have the devotees who are translating, just like we're getting translations of the commentaries on Bhagavatam. I have translations in electronic format on at least the 10th canto of Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And there's that book being published of just Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. So I'm sure that'll eventually be there. Eventually you'll be able to get volumes of all the Bhagavatams and Bhagavad Gita with all the commentaries of all the different acharyas. And gradually our own devotees will comment as well. And you'll have commentaries. You can find this sort of thing with the Bible. So there'll be the Bible verse and then the commentaries. Then there's different levels of margins with different levels of commentary by contemporary scholars. So eventually we will have that. Okay, I should end now. Oh, yes, please.
Krishna consciousness is crystal clear, the philosophy. So then why is there so much struggling on basic things?
Why is there so much struggle when it's clear? Prabhupada said, until you reach the stage of nishtha, it's a hard struggle with determination. And basically, until you're free of mostly free, nasta praishya, padresha, nichambhava, to say, until you're mostly free of passion and ignorance, mean, if we talk about it here in terms of the nadis and the shishumna, you know, a person is accustomed to walking on certain paths, and you tend to walk on the paths that you're accustomed to. And if the shishumna is all, I mean, this is literally actually on a subtle level, this is literally what happens. Like if you were to perform mystic yoga, if you try to bring the kundalini up through the shishumna, when the shishumna is clogged, instead of going through the shishumna to the sahasra chakra, it'll break out in whatever area you have it, which is why a lot of people get mental disease or physical disease from playing with kundalini. That it just, so if you try to put water through a hose when it has defects in it or it has something blocking it, it'll just come out in different ways. So first things have to be clear. And in another way, we're not doing it through a mystic yoga way, but another way we're kind of doing the same thing. You've got to clear out the modes of passion and ignorance. Until you've cleared out the modes of passion and ignorance, things don't go very well. It's a hard struggle with determination. And there's other ways to explain that. You could say that the anartas within the heart, if one has desires for lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion, the only way to fulfill those desires is to be covered with passion and ignorance. Those desires are meaningless if you're in goodness. Goodness means truth, sattva-guna. Think of it like a window. Like that's a clear window, and there's translucent windows like you have in a bathroom, and then there's something, but the wall is opaque. So the mode of ignorance is like opaque, and passion is like translucent, and goodness is transparent. So if I'm in the light, if I'm in the truth, I can't maintain, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, I can't really maintain anger and envy and lust. It's really impossible, because I see their naked forms, and I just can't do it. You know, I can, but it's very, 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 very difficult. It's possible. It's possible to choose illusion, even if you see illusion for what it is. It is possible. There are those who do, and all of us did that at some point. But it's difficult. If you want to choose something illusory, basically you have to be in illusion. So if you're saying to Krishna, I want lust, the only way you can have that is to become. You have to be covered with passion and ignorance. So as long as I'm maintaining these desires, Krishna, eko bhavanam yo viradatikama, who's reciprocating with me, yetamam prapatyante, he covers me appropriately so that I can do that. And on a very gross level, you know, if you want to enjoy fresh meat, you get covered with the body of a tiger. And the body of a tiger is really just a certain combination of the modes. So you get covered subtly, and then ultimately you get covered grossly. And as long as you're covered, as long as you have these coverings, like a block, they're like a blockage of the light. It's like I'm taking things and blocking, then the light can't come through. I'm saying I want something for which I need to be covered, and if I'm covered, no light can come through. So of course, every once in a while, I may say, I really don't want these things anymore. And like it's sort of like the curtain parts for a second, you go, wow. This Krishna consciousness is incredible. Wow. Why can't I just stay like this all the time? And then, because I have these other desires again and again. Come. So until those basic desires are cleared, until you're looking through a transparent window, it's going to be a struggle. Another way you can explain it is that, you know, when you take up Krishna consciousness, you give up the gross sense gratification. You say, I'm going to give up illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and family. I'm not going to go to movies anymore. I'm not going to, you know, go to the restaurant. Of course, you go to this restaurant. But, you know, I'm going to give up gross sense pleasures. But you don't yet have full spiritual pleasure. You don't yet have Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. Joy beyond joy. And we're an Annamaya Vyasa. We're pleasure-seeking creatures, like a heat-seeking missile. You know, in the military, yeah, heat-seeking missiles. So we're pleasure-seeking beings. And what is the what does that Brahman say in the 11th canto? He said the only beings that are happy are the fools and the transcendentalists. So we stop being a fool, and we're not yet a transcendentalist. Yeah, well, it's difficult. We're trying, you know,
trying to live without happiness, without material happiness, and without full spiritual happiness. So that's very difficult. So there's a tendency in that stage to then to occasionally go and try to get some material satisfaction. That's the tendency. And the slower that you go through that stage, the more you're going to have a tendency to grab material pleasures, because you can't live without pleasures. So what you want to do is you want to go through that stage as quickly as possible. That's what you want to do. You want to pass through Narata Nivritti as quickly as possible. But most of us don't want to pass through Narata Nivritti as quickly as possible. We want to pass through it as slowly as possible. You know, we say, yes, I want to make advancement today. Okay, this is what it means. I'll forget it. You know, I was talking with one devotee a few months ago. He was chatting with me on Skype, and he was saying, you know, my spiritual life has become so dry, my chanting is so dry, I just don't feel like I'm making much advancement, you know. We're talking about different things. And finally I said, why don't you go to Krishna and ask Krishna, what's the next anartha I need to get rid of? He said, oh, I don't want to do that. He said, I've been praying to Krishna for a long time, look, just go easy with me, don't make it too hard, don't give me anything that's going to be really painful, don't push me too much. I said, you're the one who's asking for slow advancement. You're complaining that it's slow. That's what you're asking for. Make it slow, Lord. Why is it so slow? So we're afraid. We're afraid. We don't want to clean everything up. You know, we're hesitant. And if you're hesitant and you're afraid, then the tendency is going to be to try to get pleasure on the material platform again. Because you can't live without pleasure. You've got to be having spiritual pleasure. You can live for a while without pleasure, but not for a long time. Now, of course, there are some people who manage to do that through anger. There are some people who manage to, you know, not engage in any material sense gratification and not have any spiritual happiness by being very angry all the time. And we have quite a few of them in this one. And they're getting a sort of pleasure from the anger. Anger gives a kind of energy, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And kind of set. Doesn't anger give a kind of funny kind of pleasure? Mm-hmm. I smashed that enemy. You know, there's something, some adrenaline or endorphins or something that are released, you know, or bitterness. Now, all those girls and GBCs. Sometimes they go that way. And they may be very austere, you know, they may be very fixed. Very austere. I've never even eaten peanut butter, you know. but they're like that. So that's another getting pleasure. They are getting material pleasure, but it's about ignorance, and they don't recognize it as material sense gratification. So my suggestion is try to go through an arta nivritti as fast as possible. And how do you do that? Ask for courage. Faith. Ask for courage. As Lord Ramachandra says, if somebody asks me for courage, then I certainly give it to them. You have to ask for the courage to trust. I was recently reading a really nice essay by Satchinanda Maharaj. He was talking about when he went through a lot of difficulty in his life, especially physical illness. And he said one of the things he learned is trust, trust, and trust again. So trust Krishna. Suridam Sarvabhutana. Surid. Bring at the heart. Surit. Surit. You know, we'll trust a doctor who'll cut us open with a knife. And we won't trust Krishna. I trust a doctor so much that I'll let them make me unconscious. Can you imagine? Let me just think about this for a minute. Okay, make me completely unconscious and do whatever you want with me. And they mess up sometimes. My daughter-in-law's brother had cancer. And when they were operating, they accidentally sliced one of the, what's it called? One of the tubes that goes to the kidneys. No, it's a tube. Each kidney has a tube that goes from the kidney to the bladder. Yeah, something like that. And they had to take out a kidney. You know, they slipped. Tamal Krishna, when he was having an operation, also so slipped. They can slip. Sorry. You know? They just came out to the family and said, sorry. We slipped.
And you have to sign a paper before.
You have to sign a paper before. You sign a paper. You know, if you slip, you slip. And you go unconscious. You know what they're doing.
Sometimes they cut off the wrong leg.
Sometimes they cut off the wrong leg, operate on the wrong side of the brain. They try to do things in hospital now where they mark you with one of those permanent markers. This leg! You know? Seriously. They actually do that. So I have that much trust. You have that much trust that I go to the doctor and the doctor just does a general physical and I feel great. And the doctor says, according to this test, you have cancer. I don't know. How do I know? I feel great. Sorry, you have cancer. You have 3 months to live. And I go, okay. And I believe him. I look at the little, you know, whatever, the film, the x-ray, the scan. And I don't know what I'm looking at, just a bunch of colors and blobs. And I go, yeah, okay. All right, we're going to have to cut you open. And I go unconscious, and they take a knife to my body. And then they say, now we're going to have to pour poisons in your body for the next 6 months. All your hair is going to fall out. You're going to vomit all the time. And I said, okay. They don't trust Krishna. I don't trust Krishna. I'm not willing to go to Krishna. And you got to do this honestly, okay? Folks, don't fake this. I'm not willing to go to Krishna and say, I surrender myself. Whatever you want to do, you can do. You know where my disease is. I trust you. We say, no, it might hurt. It's not willing to get chemotherapy and radiation that I'm not willing to have. Okay, Krishna, take out the anartha. And therefore, I struggle and 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 struggle. And therefore, I'm not finding spiritual happiness. And therefore, I go back to material happiness. I should probably stop now, or they're going to go one of these canes that the shepherds have and pull me off. I'm probably already in trouble for going over. So thank you very much for all your hospitality here at Radhadesh. Thank you for forgiving me and tolerating all of my offenses and problems, and I hope sometime I'll get to serve you again. Always, you should.